during our moment of Theater Radio.
Streaming in this realm and beyond, you're listening to Paranormal Investigator Radio with your hosts, Peter Leonard, Rich Nicodem, and Dr. David DeProspero.
And good evening, everybody. Thank you for joining us on tonight's episode of Paranormal Investigator Radio. We are your hosts, Dr. Dave DeProspero.
I'm Peter Leonard.
And I'm Rich Nicodem.
And we're here tonight to talk to you about everything paranormal related, from ghosts and spirits to Bigfoot to all of the tips, tools, and techniques of the professional paranormal investigator. We hope you enjoyed tonight's show, and we will be right back with you.
Phone lines are now open. In North America, call toll-free 1-888-429-5471. International callers, please dial area code 530-763-1594.
So we have a great show for everybody this evening. What's on tap, gentlemen?
Well, we have Dustin Perry calling in from Ghost Hunters. That should be an exciting phone call.
It's always a pleasure to talk to Dustin. He's a great guy.
Dustin is a cool guy.
Dr. David's going to be enlightening us on the Ovilus
and
some techniques.
We have Rich, who's going to be talking about some of our upcoming events, of which we have a lot. We have some exciting announcements tonight.
Big things happening for RIP.
Should be fun.
If anybody has any questions, please feel free to call in. We can take your calls, we can take your emails, and you could also visit us on the website. You could go to www.romeinvestigatorsoftheparanormal.com, and you could send us your messages and your questions live.
And the call-in number is 1-888-429-5471, and it's for the U.S. and Canada.
One more time, Pete.
1-888-429-5471.
We hope everybody's having a great day here in Central New York. It's a dark, rainy spring evening. Hopefully, where you are, the weather's a little bit better. So, Pete.
And, of course, we're coming to you live from the thriving metropolis of Rome, New York. For those of you who've never been to Rome, New York, you definitely have to come by and see it.
It's the paranormal hotspot of the Northeast.
It is.
Paranormal Investigator Radio on bbsradio.com.
Well, business has been booming for us, gentlemen. We got a call from up around the Camden, New York area. They've been spotting black panthers out in the woods.
Black panthers?
Yes. And although we're paranormal, we also include cryptozoology in that. We've been asked to actually go out there and see if we could get some pictures of that. So that should be an interesting hunt.
Do we get weapons to take with us?
Are these things man-eaters?
Black panthers?
I don't know. Well, believe it or not, I've been actually doing some research on this stuff, and there's been thousands of reports up in the Adirondacks about black panthers, cougars, something the Department of Environmental Conservation says can't be possible. But then again, this goes all along with that the big cat phenomenon in England and throughout the southern United States, where big cats are being spotted.
So we have big cats, and we're also in an area that has a lot of Bigfoot sightings as well. Lighthall, New York.
Well, they could be Bigfoot's pets.
They could be.
Bigfoot would have to have a big cat.
I wonder who his vet is.
Also, over the weekend, we went to the southern tier of New York for a consultation. That was another interesting good time. The things that we actually caught a lot of evidence on was the Frank's box. Now, I remember, Dave, when we first bought one, I don't even remember when that was, 2008, 2009, that shack hack.
Yeah.
We couldn't get anything on it.
I'm still really skeptical about that. I'm going to touch on that tonight in my Ovilus piece, but...
But I'll tell you, it actually made me a believer. It was... the stuff that was coming over there. At one point, we were just randomly going through questions, trying to ascertain who was there. And you know me, how I like to bust chops. So I asked the spirit or whoever was there, what do you like to drink? And all of a sudden, it came over the radio as clear as could be. Head. And I'm like, okay, you like to drink.
So where are we
head?
Going with this, Pete?
And as soon as I said that, the homeowner like had that shocked look and put her hands over her mouth, and she's like, oh my God, like so-and-so who died in the house, every night after work would go to the bar across the street, order a beer with at least a 4-inch head on it.
That's
he
weird.
Wouldn't drink it any other way. So then I got serious again. So we went back in there, and I started firing questions out. Do you like a bottle or a can? The word mug came over. And then it just started responding with intelligent answers, which makes you wonder. And I know that'll be a perfect segue into what you want to talk about. But, other than that, yes, I mean, a lot of good things are coming up on tap.
You should see this photo Pete sent me of this investigation of this doll. It is the hideous thing I've ever seen.
This is a creepy-looking doll. We have it up on our cell phone here.
Oh, and Pete, tell them what kind of EMF readings you're getting off this thing.
It was extremely high. It was a little over 300.
For those of you who can't see it, it's a marionette, which means its arms are controlled by some wooden rods. And it's a very tall, grotesque-looking figure with a green face and ethnic dress.
I think that's human hair, too.
And there is hair.
It's even weirder.
Definitely unique. So was this part of the claims?
Well, there was a lot of shadow people, a lot of walking upstairs, a lot of errant sounds that people just didn't know where they were coming from. They never really thought to look at the stuff that was in the house if it was haunted.
Now, what is this doll? I mean, what does it represent?
Well, somebody was traveling around the world. They saw
one of those things. We need to give our friend John Zaffis a call for one of these.
Sounds like somebody needs to watch a little episode of Haunted Collector, I see.
That would be perfect. Yeah. That is scary.
Yeah, this is definitely a piece that would belong in John's Museum. I've taken a tour of John's Museum, and let me tell you something. He's got a lot of weird dolls like that, so that would be a perfect addition to what he does. We've done some investigations ourselves where we've actually taken things out of people's homes and the paranormal activity has ceased or diminished. So items really can have energy attached to them. So when you're watching this show, Haunted Collector, and you see him removing things, like at the Halbert House when he removed the object from the wall on the third floor, that these things actually do attach energy to him. And it can be negative energy or it can be positive energy.
It's amazing. We're going to have to try and have John on here one of these days as our special guest, and he could probably tell us more about that.
Those Halbert House dolls. I'm waiting for that one to be in my room when I get home one night.
And we'll talk more about that as soon as we come back.
Paranormal Investigator Radio. Hosted by the grown investigators of the paranormal. Visit us online at www.roaminvestigatorsoftheparanormal.com.
So each episode, we try and present some piece of technology that's used in the paranormal investigating field, just for a little bit of information. I know there's a lot of unusual devices out there. Some of it's homemade, some of it's commercially available. And as we always say, you can't yet go down to your local Walmart or your Supercenter and look for the paranormal equipment aisle. So hopefully some of this information that we present to you will give you a little bit more information when you're trying to make your next paranormal purchase. Tonight we're going to talk about the Ovilus. It's one of the most controversial devices in the paranormal market today, and it's manufactured by a gentleman named Bill Chappell of the company Digital Dowsing. For anyone who's watched any paranormal television show in the last 5 years, you're most likely familiar with the Ovilus. It's the device that produces spoken words in a very robotic tone based on a variety of environmental readings that it takes. I've had the opportunity to use an Ovilus once in my life, and I found it to be a fascinating device from a technological standpoint, but I'm also very much on the fence about its applicability to scientific investigations.
Ovilus, they come in green and black, right?
Yeah, right. Right.
I want a green one.
The Ovilus is actually a form of ITC, or instrumental transcommunication. And basically, ITC is the modern technology used to communicate verbally with the deceased. ITC can also be facilitated using audio recorders for EVP sessions, Frank's boxes, television static, and a variety of other modern technologies. The form of ITC, the modern form of it, is very closely related to the ancient art of scrying, which is staring into reflective surfaces to invoke visions of the supernatural. This is what Nostradamus used for his divination exercises.
I usually get that after eating a Hershey bar.
So what is the Ovilus really do, and why is this such a touchy subject? The long and short of it is that nobody really knows how the device works. Here, though, is what is known for certain. It's a microprocessor-controlled device. It's a tiny computer. And it has a variety of sensors attached to it. These sensors are even a mystery in themselves, though we do know that it measures EMF fields, temperature, and there's been word of humidity, barometric pressure, and static field detection as well. But those are unconfirmed. Usually when we test a device, the first thing I do is take it apart. And I have not done that yet with this device, so I can't say for certain what's in it.
Well, if I did that, you'd have a bag of parts.
Is this a device where keywords come up?
Yeah, that's the one.
So we need to actually program our own vocabulary into device, add words like bazinga, things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, there you go.
That comes up.
When the device runs, environmental readings are taken. They're combined together, and a unique seed number is generated from that value between 0 and 511, or 0 and 1023, or 0 and 2047, whatever the maximum number is specified in that particular device version. The number range corresponds to the range of words in the word database. So, for example, the first Ovilus had only 512 words in its dictionary, so the number range was 0 to 511. So that seed number that's generated matches some number in the word database, and then that word is then spoken aloud using a voice synthesizer within the device. There's two modes that the Ovilus works in. Dictionary mode, which is kind of based on the levels detected on those sensors. Bill's software, which is embedded in the microcontroller, picks up words from the word database and generates the speech to dictate the selected words. However, in phonetic mode, which is the second mode, the software picks up parts of speech instead of actual words. Those parts of speech are called phonemes, and the phonemes are used to construct words, and those words obviously are not included in the word database. So sometimes people get strange names or random words that don't seem to correspond to anything that would naturally be in the database. And then it generates the speech to dictate that constructed word. If you're interested, though, look up phonemes or phonetics for more information on how people create words from individual sounds. Phonetic mode on the Ovilus works basically on that principle. There's a lot of other modes depending on the version of the device used, but those two are the most popular. There's a couple of variants of the device that act as standalone EMF meters with an LED display that's pretty similar to the K2, which we all know and love. But Bill himself has indicated that that feature should not replace a dedicated EMF meter, since it would be much more accurate, the dedicated meter, that is, despite the fact that the Ovilus has real-time sampling. So here's the problem. When people start to realize that humans have no true understanding of how the spirit world works, things kind of get weird. People find it audacious to believe that this electronic device can span the Great Divide and facilitate spirit communication with a simple word database. Would it really be feasible for a spirit from the 1600s, 1700s, or even today to understand the complexities of modern digital circuitry,
sure,
master it, and then use that knowledge to affect the environment in such a way to produce a specific word. I know we have this conversation all the time. How can ghosts know how to use modern technology?
Well, if they took a microprocessor engineering class.
That's true.
I mean, maybe the next 20 years or 30 years when some of us paranormal investigators pass on, that these devices will find useful because we'll understand the whole concept and how they operate.
That's true.
And then when we come back, well, oh, it's the obvious.
So when
so,
we
okay,
come
we
back
go.
As spirits, then we'll be able to use it. So this is a very consistent argument against most modern paranormal devices. Bill's software itself is the controller here. It is this software that's embedded in the microcontroller that selects the words based on a set of rules governed by environmental sensor readings. Essentially, the words selected are very much random or close to random. Many groups out there don't use the Ovilus anymore, just because there are so many unknown variables that can't be accounted for. People have said that picking random words out of a hat produces similar results, and the same is often said about the Frank's box and various other devices of this genre.
Did you remember that crazy one where I was using my smartphone?
That's
true.
I believed
that we were speaking with the Native American lady.
Yep.
Showing pictures, and every time something touched a nerve, she would slam a door.
That's right. So, although there's a lot of uncertainties with the Ovilus, there are countless investigation teams out there that still use it as a viable device and who actually get amazingly accurate responses from this device. Although Bill has labeled the Ovilus as an entertainment device only, he has provided instructions to the serious paranormal investigator on how to use the device to its fullest capacity. For anyone who has investigated for some time, it is without surprise that Bill's instructions are to use the widest assortment of tools possible at any given time to validate and cross-check any results received. Essentially, Bill is saying to never just use one device as a sole basis for any investigation. There's lots of devices out there, and most teams have lots of devices in use, so use them. A person wouldn't walk around a house with a K2 and deem it haunted because a few LEDs illuminated. However, K2 activity occurring at the same time that an EVP was recorded, yeah, that's compelling. Even more compelling is K2 activity, an EVP being recorded, and temperature fluctuations all at the same time. As you can see, evidence is much more compelling when it is validated and corroborated across multiple instruments. The same goes for the Ovilus. Always use it in combination with other sound instruments so that you can validate any results. Personally, I'm still on the fence about this device. There is a new version coming out this month, though, that has a lot of new features, though not many new capabilities. If you guys haven't seen it, check it out on the Digital Dowsing website. I'd love to get it and try it out in the field, but because they range from about $250 to $500, I still think that the most valid, time-tested, and reliable results can be achieved with a high-quality audio recorder, an EMF meter, and a temperature sensor. Can't forget the night vision camera either. What do you guys think?
Thermal vision always helps.
Thermal is great. A little bit out of that price range. We're fortunate
thermals,
to have them. But
thermals are very expensive. I saw the device used once, and I think it was on Ghost Adventures they actually used it.
Yeah,
and
they
I
use it often.
Yeah, I wasn't completely sold on it, to be honest with you. Again, based on all the information you presented, it's kind of like just a random generation of words.
Like a lot of these tools, you want to believe, you want to see them work, you want to see them get results, but in the end, sometimes it's kind of a letdown what actually comes through.
Trust me, if I was sold on it, I would go down and buy one. I wouldn't care
Absolutely.
About the $200 if I could have proof in the form of vocabulary and names and words coming through on a device like that. I think any paranormal investigator would do it. But
and you know what? With this new version coming out, everybody check it out. It's the Ovilus 3 from Digital Dowsing.
Whether you're an investigator, enthusiast, or ethereal spirit, we are bringing you the information from this realm and beyond.
With your hosts, Peter Meyer, Rich Nicodem, and Dr. David DeGrasse.
Again, our phone lines are open. If you'd like to call in, we have Dustin Perry coming up. The number is 1-888-429-5471, or you could Skype us at BBS Radio number 2. No number sign.
Okay, our guest tonight needs no introduction. If you follow the TV show Ghost Hunters or Ghost Hunters International, then you would recognize this tall, good-looking gentleman with the spiky hair. He originates from the New England area. We know him as Dustin Parry, or as other people know him, the paranormal rock star. And he is our special celebrity guest tonight on the show. Oh, and I guess we have some technical difficulties here waiting for him to hook up with us, so we'll move on. When he calls in, we'll go back to it.
So we have quite a bit coming up as far as events for RIP. I know one thing we're working on is the Hulbert House. That's up in Boonville, New York, one of our favorite locations.
Yeah, the event's called Hulbert Con, and this is actually our second event. And for those of you who haven't seen the Facebook postings on the event, we're going to have our special guest, John Zaffis, who's going to be returning to the Hulbert House. As you know, he investigated it on the TV show Haunted Collector, and he's going to be there for the whole entire weekend. I mean, we're renting out the rooms. We've got all the meals. We've got workshops being presented by RIP and John Zaffis. And, of course, we've got our VIP and Golden Pass investigation on Saturday night. Are you guys pumped for the show?
Absolutely.
I love it there.
We'll be spending pretty much the whole weekend there, guiding people around. And
usually when we go to the Hulbert House, we're there for 6-8 hours. We do an event. We do an investigation. But in this case, we're actually going to be there in residence for multiple days. We're going to be hosting a lot of different events. And, of course, John has been to the Hulbert House, both with the TV show and with us, a few times now. And every time he's there, he says amazing things happen. We can validate that every time we go there, something amazing happens.
One of the highlights, I believe, last time was he was doing an actual Frank's Box session up there on the third floor, and the door slammed again up there, something that seems to happen quite a bit when he's there.
That door slams all the time. It slammed on Rich. Pete, Rich and I were up there one night, and we were investigating. And Rich walked through the door, and as soon as he set foot through that door, the door slammed behind him. And Pete and I just kind of stopped, and we were looking, trying to figure out if it was Rich that did it or if something happened to do it. Rich opened the door, and he thought we were playing a prank on him. He asked which one of us did it.
Oh, no, it wasn't Rich who did it. It actually happened to me twice. When we were doing the event last year with John Zaffis at the Hulbert House, I went into that very back room with those creepy dolls. And the whole thing to me was to get them all mad at me, so I would start trying to basically intimidate them and talk nasty to them, and then the next thing you know, that door would slam on me.
Yep.
So that was actually the second time, and I believe also in Haunted Collector it slammed on
them as well. Yeah, it slams quite frequently, that one specific door.
It's always a mixed bag. I remember last time we were up there, something that never happened before. We were in the master suite up on the third floor, I guess you would call it. I was just resting my hand on a chair. And next thing I know, the chair pinned my hand to the wall, and I couldn't move the chair. Not that something sat down, it just wouldn't let me move my hand. I think Rich or someone else on our team was trying to move the chair away and couldn't move it. Then it just released.
It's a very weird place.
That was pretty bizarre.
So what do we have for tickets? I know we're going to have a different set of tickets available than we did for our previous events.
Yeah, last year all we did was a general admission ticket and a VIP ticket. And keep in mind, it was just the event for Saturday and Saturday night. This time, we've got full run of the Hulbert House for the weekend. So we're going to have Golden Pass tickets, which include accommodations at the Hulbert House, your meals, workshops, investigations. We have a VIP ticket, which is going to include everything except the rooms, general admission ticket, and we're also working on a couple different upgrade tickets, too, as well, where people who have normal general admission tickets can get involved in some of the workshops. So a lot more options to share.
And we got to definitely point out the fact that with that golden ticket, you actually get a room at the Hulbert House. So you have a completely immersive experience. You eat there, you learn, you investigate, and then you sleep there in the very rooms that we're investigating.
Yeah, so this is, if you wanted to explore the Hulbert House, this is definitely the event to do it. Plus, we're also going to have a meet and greet with John Zaffis on Friday night, along with a DJ party, too, as well, which will be open to the general public for a small admission charge. So we got a great bunch of stuff going on at the event.
We're even trying to organize a zombie walk, so if you're interested in zombies, let us know.
Well,
we'll try making it work.
We're working on it.
Visit us online. ParanormalInvestigatorRadio.com.
Okay, so we are back to Paranormal Investigator Radio. And we have, I believe we now have our celebrity guest on the line. Is he there?
Hey, brother, how are you?
There he is.
There's Dustin.
Hey,
what's
Dustin,
up,
this
guys?
Is Rich. How are you, sir?
Very well, thank you.
Well, our timing is off a little bit. I got to go ahead to give you the introduction, and then the next thing you know, I was getting flagged. No, no, he's not there. Something happened. So let me just...
no, I'm here. Little cell phone issue, but we're good, brother.
Oh, okay, good. Let me just give the general audience an introduction here of who you are. If anyone follows the TV show Ghost Hunters and Ghost Hunter International, our guest tonight is definitely well recognizable. He's a tall, good-looking guy with sunglasses and a spiky hair. You've also seen him on the website Paranormal Rockstar. And ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show tonight, Dustin Parry.
Yay! Thanks for joining us, Dustin. How's everything going for you?
Everything's great, man. No complaints there. Everything's very well. Thank you.
Good. Thanks for joining us.
So tell us a little bit. I mean, there's a lot of viewers. I was actually on Facebook today trying to let people know that you're going to be on the show tonight and asking them what specific questions they might have for you. So I got a lot of responses back, and so I'm going to go down through here and order the questions that were given to me, if that's okay.
Yeah, sounds good, man. Let's do it.
Okay. First and foremost, everyone wants to know, how did you get involved in the paranormal, and how old were you?
My first paranormal experience happened when I was a child. I was living in a house in Providence. I moved in when I was 7, and when I was around 8 or 9, and I'd seen what we would classify today as a shadow figure. And this thing was just standing about 6 feet tall, and it was standing in the doorway of my bedroom, and the hallway and everything beyond it was all completely lit up, so it was completely backlit, and I was able to see it, and it really freaked me out. Being a kid, I didn't know what to do, and it just kind of ducked under the covers and waited for it to go away. And I lived there for many years until I was just before I was 18. And I never saw the thing again, but it really just kind of sparked an interest in me. And once one of my buddies, he's a couple of months older than I am, once we got a license, we started going to all the places of local history and legend and trying to see if we could find anything.
Well, that must have scared the crap out of you as a little kid, because actually I saw my first chapter at 45 years old, and that scared me.
Yeah, it's even today, like, you go out looking for these kind of things, but you never know what you're going to find. So when all of a sudden something just kind of pops in, it can take you by surprise, for sure.
Well, I never told you this story, but we were doing an investigation in a church, and Pete and I were actually inside of the church, and we had a laser grid we were actually using for the first time, so we put it up onto the balcony of the church, and it was great because it had this giant green tic-tac-toe board. And as Pete and I were looking at it, admiring this technological marvel, the next thing you know, this shadow stood up in the right corner of the balcony, and it was extremely tall. And you could actually see the shape of arms, and it ran the whole width of the balcony and blacked out the windows. There's two giant windows. As it went by and down the stairs, and you could hear something run down the stairs. Now, we were actually locked in the church, just the two of us. So, again, 45 years old, seeing that for the first time freaked me out a little bit.
Yeah. Indeed, man. It's crazy. Absolutely.
Yeah, of course, we didn't have the camera set up.
Yeah, this was during setup time.
It never happens with the camera set up. These things are too smart for all that.
We got the laser grid up and running, and then... That was it.
It's like going out at night with your video camera looking for UFOs, and you're out all night and you don't see anything. And then one night you're going out there, and all of a sudden you see them in the sky. So that's how it happens. So now let me ask you a question. How did you get involved in the TV show Ghost Hunters? I mean, that's actually one of the most popular questions I got back on Facebook. People are like, how did you get on Ghost Hunters? Maybe you can share that with us.
Yeah, I was home late one night, was flipping through TV, and I happened to see that these guys were out there doing what I was doing, but they were actually gaining access to people's houses, and what was really important to me was, making the effort to try to help people out and explain things. And so I had gotten in touch with them because I have a background in television production, and I had seen at least on what I saw on the show, like if you're having lots of technical issues and everything, so it sent a bunch of emails just kind of letting them know that I was able to fix a lot of those problems and I was able to operate all that equipment. And then I told them my background was looking into the field and everything. And so they kind of brought me on board after a little interview and you know, said I could work with the team, but not for television purposes, which was cool, which is all I was really looking for at the time. And then after after a short period of time, they asked me to take part in some episodes on the show, and it just kind of took off from there.
So you actually got involved with the show not actually as a cast member, but actually working on the production end.
Yeah, well, I was they brought me in as a cast member, but I was just kind of offering to help them with their tech stuff, like with their DVR and all that kind of thing, you know. But yeah, my first time out on the show, I was actually as a cast member, but working behind the scenes before, like just with the home team and everything, like figuring out their gear and making sure nothing was broken, kind of stuff.
So from a fan to fame, that's how it worked for you.
Yeah. Something like that, man.
That's a good story.
Somewhere in between, at least. But it's very thankful, man, especially doing internationally. I just was very, very thankful. I was just talking to my buddy about it the other day, like all the countries I got to go visit and all the cultures I got to, you know, take part in and observe. It was a very, very incredible experience. I'm very thankful for it. And it's definitely helped to change my view of so many things and really broaden my understanding of a lot of things, too.
Yeah. On Ghost Hunters International, I mean, granted, on the show Ghost Hunters, you guys used to travel around the country going to different places, different states, but when you made the jump to Ghost Hunters International, here you're going to like different continents, different countries, different cultures and languages.
Oh, yeah. It was a little bit of culture shock the first couple of times that you go to, like, you know, you're not in England or Ireland and stuff where their culture is a little bit different, but everyone's at least speaking their language, and, you know, it's not so much of a difference. But still, to learn the different understandings of the spirit world and to really just kind of submerge yourself in their culture for, you know, we'd be out at least in the country a couple weeks at a time, 2-3 weeks at a time before we move on to the next one. So you really get a nice feel for it. And obviously you want more time to just kind of vacation around and do things, but we had a very, very tight schedule. But still, you had time to talk to the locals. And the guys, you know, in our local, like, production crew that would kind of come out with us and help us out, and our tour guides and everything, you spend a lot of time with them off camera too, and you learn a lot about their experiences and their understandings and the culture, and it really made you thankful for the opportunities that we had.
Well, what's the most interesting case that you did overseas?
Oh man, there's a lot of places that were really intriguing, you know, and I really enjoyed going to Prague quite a bit. When we went out to the old Czech Republic and everything, and we did Katowice. Katowice was a really, really cool place. And they kind of built it up, I think, more than they need to be with, you know, television nonsense with the whole gate to hell and all this kind of stuff. But it's just a really cool, kind of creepy place. And it was just really, really fantastic. That was one of my favorite ones. The Philippines were really good, too. I had a lot of good experiences in the Philippines. We did Clark Air Force Base, which was a lot of fun. And it was it became very kind of poignant and very sentimental because they had, you know, a lot of our U.S. military were stationed there during the Vietnam War and everything. So there was it was an American connection to it, and some of the EVPs and stuff that we got there were seemingly from American soldiers and stuff. So it was really, really cool.
So how did you feel about making the jump over to Ghost Hunters International from Ghost Hunters? Was that something that...
It was crazy, man. I had actually taken myself out of the show and everything. I'm still working with the group locally, but I had taken myself out of the original show just because I just got married and I really wasn't interested in traveling around and stuff at the time. I was just kind of settling down. But after they started, you know, they were starting GHI, they asked me to take part in it, and I wasn't ready. And halfway through the first season, they called me again, and I decided to go out there and give it a shot. And it was amazing. It was really tough to say goodbye to my family and everything and head out there knowing that I'd be gone for at least a month and a half, you know. It's a lot of commitment. And first couple of days in a new country is always kind of exciting, but then after 2 or 3 days, it's like you start getting homesick again. And a lot of it, I mean, you are pretty busy, but travel days are always kind of the worst because, you know, you're tired anyway and everyone's a little bit cantankerous and you've been on the road for a while. So everyone's like, oh, yeah, you like family, but you fight like family too after a while, you know. So you get kind of grumpy and just kind of want your own personal space. And so there was a little bit of that. So, there was a lot that went along with the travel. It definitely wasn't like being on vacation, but I tried to make the most out of it. We usually had like one day a week where you could kind of have to yourself. So I tried to make the most out of that for sightseeing purposes and those kind of things. And just to document the journey, you know.
So, go ahead.
You know, Dustin, what most people don't realize as they're investigating around the United States is that when we're here investigating and we talk about things being old, it's a completely different story when you're overseas and you talk about things being old.
Yeah.
I know when I went to Ireland, I got to go to Lepp Castle and meet Sean Ryan and, you know, all the same places that you guys got to go to when you were there. But, man, when you put your hand on a building that's 3,000 years old, it's a little bit different of a feeling than it is when you're in some place, you know, rather contemporary like Gettysburg. And to us, Gettysburg is old.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely, man. That's a good point. You know, it's sometimes you're in these places and you're just in awe. It's like, wow, I'm in a building that's been here longer than, you know, the civilization of, you know, the you know, European occupation, everything of America. I'm not, you know, counting all the natives and stuff, the native tribes that were here, but the settlements, all that kind of stuff. And you're like, it's really kind of awe-inspiring. It's very cool opportunities that we had. And to talk to the guys like Sean Ryan and everything, you know, and to get their understandings of things. And Lepp Castle is a fantastic place, beautiful. I really enjoy that. Being in Ireland and over in Wales and stuff, it's like walking around in a fairy tale half the time. It's like, you know, stuff that is just so picturesque you've only seen in novels and things like that, and just in your mind. And to be out there, it's really something.
And people around the world have a much different interpretation of the paranormal. A lot of people in America are scared of the paranormal. They're scared of ghosts. It's a cultural thing. But I know with my own experiences overseas over there, you know, it's totally different. People feel that they're custodians of their location and they're, you know, maintaining it for generations to come and also representing the people that have gone before them. So it's a totally different viewpoint.
Yeah, oh yeah, Ireland especially really embraces a lot of those kind of stuff. And some of the countries we went to, you know, it was also like a difference between generations. I remember some parts of Africa, the older generations really had a deep respect for spirituality and for the paranormal and the unknown and the spirit world. And the younger generations were kind of more, you know, getting away from that kind of stuff. Same thing down in Tasmania. The younger generations more tech-savvy, and the older generations kind of thought of things different. So there's a little bit of difference there, too. I remember being in France, and our tour guide, our on-camera client for France, he's got us in the catacombs, and he's telling us all the stuff, and then we ask him what he thinks about it. He's like, oh, it's all nonsense. He's like, pretty much everybody in France doesn't believe in any of that. It's so weird, you know? But it's just one of those things. It's different everywhere you go, which is kind of cool because you get to get a little bit of their understanding, a little bit of the way they look at things. And one of the things that really kind of stood out to me was that the respect that is kind of universal, you know, amongst most of the people that I came in contact with that work within the paranormal field. There's a lot of people have very healthy respect for the afterlife and for the unknown. And I think that is probably the most important thing. And some of the things that, unfortunately, I see a lot of people and a lot of groups moving away from, but I think that sometimes it's just a growing process, and I think that at some point there's a level, a moment of maturity that kicks in, and then you start to realize what you're dealing with, and you start to realize your own place in this world and the next, and then you look at things and you approach things a lot differently.
So what are you up to these days?
I'm busy, man, always busy. You know, I keep down my day job and stuff. I'm still working in the medical field. I'm a practice representative. I do anesthesia. And then I work at nights for the Pawtucket Red Sox, doing a lot of their media, their video and stuff. And still doing at least, you know, one public event a month for the paranormal. And then in the fall, I do a lot of college lectures. And I do a lot of personal investigations, private ones, locally in New England. And pretty much like a switchboard operator. I get a lot of emails and tweets and Facebook messages from people that are having problems, and I try to answer them all the best I can, and if there's someone in the area that I trust, I try to get them in contact with them. And what's on the horizon for me now is I've really kind of found a niche with doing motivational lectures and inspirational speaking, and I think that it just all kind of came to be just because of the platform that I've been given, and I'm very thankful to have it. People see me on TV or they meet me in person, and you kind of just, you know, strike a connection, and next thing you know, people start asking you spiritual questions, and then people start asking you, like, how to deal with different things in life, and it's just taken on a whole other world for me, and it's been fantastic. I really love talking to people and trying to help people and trying to inspire people to just, you know, not give up with all the trials and the nonsense that we go through with this life, and to have a better understanding that, you know, this isn't the end for us, but we need to do the best we can while we're here, and we need to try to help each other. And that's really what I'm passionate about, and something that, to me, all ties in with the paranormal and ties in with you know, the quote-unquote unknown, because to me now it's not such an unknown. You know, I don't have any kind of fear with the other side, and a very healthy understanding and respect for it, and I think that when you get that type of knowledge, and you can use it in the right way, you can use it to try to shed light on things for a lot of people and help a lot of people, and that's what I'm all about doing.
Well, I can see you doing the whole motivational thing. I mean, you're such an upbeat person. That's really kind of up your alley. I know you and I have had a lot of dealings in the past, and every time I've talked to you, you're always so upbeat and positive, and you have such a good view on life.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. So, you know, I was telling people the other day, I put it on Twitter. I pretty much live on Twitter. I love being on Twitter, but at Dustin Perry. It's very easy to follow. But I just feel like you have a choice every day. You can be miserable or you can be happy. And why the hell be miserable? I mean, stuff's going to happen. You're going to have days where you're going to be struggling and you're going to be going through some tough times. We all go through, you know, kind of the same unfortunate events and loss and everything. Some of them more tragic than others, unfortunately. But at some point, you got to dust yourself off and say, okay, am I going to continue to be a victim to my past and going to be a slave to my feelings? Or am I going to dust myself off and say, okay, I went through that, I suffered through it, and now I'm a stronger person, and I'm going to get up, and I'm going to get out there and mirror and kick some ass.
That's a great outlook to have on everything in general. I wish you know, all the rest of us could have that same outlook.
Yeah, I agree.
I do.
Boy, oh boy, we need to go to one of your seminars. But, you know, Dustin, have investigated with you. We know that you have a very unique style. It's almost a spiritual style, and that's definitely commendable in this field. And I have a question for you, and I ask this to all of the well-known people that we meet in the paranormal field, and you especially having a background in healthcare and, you know, having a real tie into this world and beyond. I want to get your input on this. What do you feel is the nature of death? What happens to us when we die, when we transition over? Lots of different perspectives. I'd love to hear yours.
Yeah, man. You know, it's interesting because one of the things I do is I do a lot of online ministry work with Patch Ministry and just trying to spread things as I understand it, you know, from a Christian viewpoint. But I certainly can respect it, and I hold a lot of respect for you know, the major world religions, or even people that don't embrace one faith or another, but are living in a positive way. I think that's all very, very important. And I always enjoyed someone who wasn't known specifically for, at one point in his life at least, for his take on religion, but the more you learn about him, the more spiritual you see. There's a lot of things to do with John Lennon, and John Lennon had said that he felt that death was like getting out of one car and getting into another, you know, and I always thought that was kind of interesting. And I really feel like once you're done here, you just kind of step out of this body and move into the spiritual realm, which is, it's all-encompassing. It's around us at all times now. It's just invisible to us, you know, for the most part. And sometimes we're very lucky to catch these little glimpses or have these small interactions. But it's all around us, and it's always there. And, you know, we can tap into that. And at some point, we become a part of that. We become part of this incredible, you know, greater understanding and this greater reality. So I'm not in a rush to get there because I still feel like some work to finish up here. But whenever it comes, man. I don't worry too much about it. I just hope I got things in place for everybody here that relies on me so that they'll be able to continue on and that, you know, the children grow up long enough to know me as I am and the things that I stand for and the things that I'm passionate about. And I hope that I make some type of mark in their lives and in the lives of everybody that I come in contact with. So that's pretty much the way I look at it.
That's fantastic. I mean, a lot of the people that we talk to, they have such varied viewpoints on it. They're all very noble and very relevant viewpoints. And these guys always laugh at me over here saying, why do you keep asking people that question? But I feel that it's very important to get as many different perspectives about the topic that we deal with, you know, as possible. It's a learning experience.
Well, everything.
Yeah, I completely agree, man. I think, you know, for anybody that works in this field, to not take away the bigger picture and to not even ask the bigger question. I think that's, I think you're not doing it for the right reasons. I mean, or you're not seeing it, you know. If you're just doing it to get a scare or, I don't know, to try to document something just for the sake of documentation, I really feel that you're missing the bigger picture. And for that, I'd actually feel bad because it's so incredible to come so close in contact with this type of stuff. And it should be respected. It should be, you should thirst for more knowledge and for understanding of it.
Well, with everything you've got going on these days, are you still actively involved? I mean, are you doing any cases? Are you helping people still?
Yeah. I was just been helping a friend of mine up here in New England. He was going through a very serious case and kind of dabbling in a couple of things that were actually of a darker variety, which is not something that I actually come across very often, despite what some television and media outlets want you to believe. Not everything is demonic, and not everything is out to possess you and cause you all types of problems and strife. But this particular gentleman got into something that's a little bit darker and deeper, so I've been working to try to help him out and get him in touch with people that can help him much further than I can. But in the meantime, I try to do a lot of spiritual work for him, and there's a couple other local cases and stuff that I get involved with. And a lot of times, like if it's just kind of residual stuff or it's just gentle, intelligent stuff, to be honest, between two jobs, it's kind of hard for me to get out there and handle it. But I've got people that, I know locally and stuff that I trust that I can recommend to go check it out if somebody wants somebody there to document it. And I try to get more involved with the deeper side of things, and I try to be there when it's warranted. But day-to-day stuff, the smaller things, I just unfortunately don't have a lot of time for.
Gotcha. Understand. Well, for our listening audience out there, if anyone wants to kind of find out what Dustin Parry's up to these days and how to follow him on Twitter, you can certainly go to his website, which is paranormalrockstar.com. His Twitter and Facebook information's on there. But there's one thing on that website that I always thought was very interesting, and I never get old watching this, and that is your little video on there doing Eye of the Tiger, Paranormal Rockstar, Dustin Parry. That's something that everyone in the paranormal should at least watch once. And if you've seen the TV show Supernatural, where Dean did the whole thing in his Impala, then you'll certainly appreciate Dustin's video here.
Thank you very much. I had a great time doing it. I like to do crazy stuff, and I'm a huge fan of that show, and see a lot of eerie similarities between Dean and myself, so I felt that it was only proper.
Well, I can definitely see the similarity in the video here with the green jacket and the dog tags and the black T-shirt, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, that's all stuff that I wear on a regular basis. I didn't have to purchase it for that. And this was interesting, too, man, because I know they did a lot of like Ghost Hunter kind of stuff with like the trailer and all that stuff, but I was just talking to a friend of mine about this the other day. There's a scene where they're very early on in the show where they're outside and Sam's getting like high EMF readings, and like Dean kind of slaps him in the chest and like, come on, dude, power lines. And he like points up above him. And if you go back and watch Dave Kangol and myself at Crescent Park Hotel in one of the parts of that show, we're outside and the same thing happened. And this was like 2 or 3 years before Supernatural was out. So it was just kind of funny. And, you know, I say awesome a lot. This is awesome. That's awesome. And that comes up a lot. And all of a sudden after it became evident to everybody on Twitter that I have a pie addiction, the next season, Dean had a pie addiction. Now it's a relevant thing in the show. It's just a lot of those eerie similarities that come out later on. And this whole Paranorman thing, too. I don't know if you guys saw the Paranorman cartoon, but I signed so many Paranorman posters, it's ridiculous. I remember I was sitting there in the theater and I saw the trailer, and my daughter's like, Daddy, that guy looks like you. And I was like, yeah, he kind of does.
We were just writing that on a piece of paper here, Paranorman.
So you've had a lot of loops.
Yeah, it was a great movie, too. I really enjoyed it.
TV show with Supernatural and with Paranorman and everything else. Wow, that's incredible,
that's
man.
That's great.
That's right. I've made a mark one way or another, damn it.
You certainly have. So, well, we're going to let you go. We know you got other things to do tonight, and we're going to continue on our show. And we want to say thank you very much for being a guest tonight on our show. And, again, for those who want to follow us.
My pleasure. Thank you. I just want to say if anybody is interested in my inspirational stuff, I do have a lecture that's going to be coming up June 15th in Newcastle, Pennsylvania. So if you check out my Twitter feed and stuff, I've been promoting that pretty regularly. So I'm looking forward to getting out there and getting this thing going. But thank you guys so much for having me on tonight, and God bless you all and everybody out there listening. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dustin. We appreciate it.
Thank you. It was our pleasure, Dustin. Have a great night.
All right, bud. Take care. Peace.
Peace.
Paranormal Investigator Radio on bbsradio.com.
Well, that was really interesting talking with Dustin Parry there. I actually appreciate the fact that he mentioned that he doesn't encounter demonic stuff that often. Every phone call we get, I have a demon in my house that's trying to chase me out.
I like the whole Paranormal Norman reference there.
Absolutely. That was a great movie, too.
I still haven't seen it.
You got to see that. That's a good movie.
Spoiler alert.
I'm all for the pie addiction. I do like a good chocolate pie.
Yeah, you know, that is true, because there was an event that I booked him at. It was in Springfield, Massachusetts, and they wanted to serve pumpkin pie, which is one of his favorites. So he actually stayed after the lecture, and he served everyone pumpkin pie, stayed and ate with everybody. I mean, that's just the kind of guy Dustin really
is. Yeah, he's cool.
Great guy.
And again, if you're in the Newcastle, Pennsylvania area, he's doing an inspirational lecture on June 15th. Turn out and show him some support.
And please, just for everybody, a reminder, check out the website, RomeInvestigatorsOfTheParanormal.com. Right now, it's forwarding to our Facebook page. We had some hacker incidents that we're trying to resolve with our normal website. It should be operational very soon, but we have all of our upcoming events listed on there, including our events with John Zaffis. So we definitely want as many people to be aware of those events as possible.
And actually, we did get a question on here about UFOs. What is up with all the UFO activity lately? If you guys want, I'll take a crack at that.
Go for it.
Go ahead, Pete.
The one thing I can tell you, there's been a lot of sightings of the triangular-shaped aircraft. There has been an increase in the amount of drones that are flying over the United States, the unmanned drones, which do have the capability of blacking themselves out against the background of the sky. So really, all you're seeing is something moving or a signature of lights that don't look like anything. Now, I'm not saying that you're not experiencing a UFO, but that's just something to keep in mind, that drone activity has increased.
Who knew the United States government had drone UFO capability?
Oh, boy. If you look into any of the UFO past, they're so wrapped up in the U.S. government, it's crazy. And we're not talking about conspiracy theory stuff here.
We need to get somebody from Area 51 who's got an expertise in that on the show some night and really, really dig into that.
So if you have an S4 Rhyolite 32 clearance, we want to hear from you.
And we don't want any people in black suits knocking at the door. So we have a pretty interesting show coming up in our next episode. We're going to be, again, covering a lot of the news of the paranormal, techniques, technology, and some very special guests. So if you want to keep an eye on what's going to be coming up on coming episodes, please visit our website at ParanormalInvestigatorRadio.com, and we'll do our best to keep you in the loop with everything.
And hopefully we're going to see most of you, some of you, all of you, out at the Hulbert House on June 28th.
Yes, HulbertCon. Don't forget. Make sure you get your tickets. Go to the Facebook, which is Rome Investigators of the Paranormal on Facebook, and as well as RomeInvestigatorsOfTheParanormal.com. The website should be up shortly with PayPal connection, so if you want your credit card, you can go online and buy your tickets.
And I don't know if we mentioned, you can bring your own equipment. So
definitely bring a flashlight.
Definitely.
Underwear, you know, the traditional stuff.
And on that note, we just want to thank everybody for tuning in this week. I am Dr. Dave DiProspero.
I'm Peter Leonard.
And I am Rich Nicodem.
Hosts of Paranormal Investigator Radio.
Join us for this episode of Paranormal Investigator Radio. Be sure to visit us online at ParanormalInvestigatorRadio.com. Until next time, happy hunting and stay spooky.